Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
This is episode number 101 with Corey Christman. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Corey Christman, we explore a number of interesting topics like how winemaking taught him humility, do you understand the value of others, how to give your heart as a leader, and this was very interesting, the predictive index personality assessment and how it can save schools and districts money. Thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into the episode, I'd like to take some time to thank our show's sponsors. Today's podcast is brought to you by CSC Consulting Group, whose mission is to support people in education and nonprofit organizations to improve processes and enhance the performance of their organizations. Learn more at www.cscconsultinggroup.com. Well, hey there, better leaders. I am here today with Mr. Corey M. Christman. He serves as the Chief Executive Officer of Vethos LLC, a human capital leadership and executive strategy firm. He's a retired supervisory special agent, United States Air Force Office of Special Investigations, and a veteran of Operation Iraqi Freedom. Since retiring in 2012, he's worked with the veteran advocacy space and is currently partnered with several key leaders to raise awareness for mental behavioral health for first responders nationwide. He's a professionally trained winemaker. He works with the Finger Lakes wine region of New York State, and he will be launching his own veteran first responder focused wine label in 2017. He's a recipient of numerous awards for leadership, human resource management, and innovation. In 2017, he completed the Executive Leadership Program, Cornell University, and he holds an MBA in entrepreneurship and a bachelor's in criminal justice. Corey, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Daniel, I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me. I love what you're doing.
Oh, man. Corey, thank you. And normally I launch right in, what inspired you, career in education? But I'll tell you what, my girl, she would kill me if I didn't start with the wine. We are wine enthusiasts, and her dream is to actually retire in the region of Cape Town, South Africa, just north of there. I guess they produce a lot of wine. She's from Zimbabwe. And I have to ask you, how did you get into that business, winemaking?
Well, I can tell you from my military service, I had an opportunity, as you might imagine, to travel to various parts of the world. And it wasn't till the twilight of my career that I really started focusing on wine. And, you know, like many hobbyists, I started making it in the cellar, so to speak, in my home. And being born and raised in the upstate New York area, I just have fallen in love with the Finger Lakes wine region. Not many people are familiar with it per se, but it's actually one of the oldest wine regions in our country. So about 3 years ago, I just started connecting with winemakers in this area, just awesomely supportive. I explained to them my story and what I wanted to do. And this would be my fourth vintage working with a couple different wineries, and Anthony Road Wine Company is one of them. Kemeter Wines is another, just stellar folks. And I explained to them, hey, I want to launch a veteran and first responder focused label. And they've been supporting me the entire way. So, you know, like many hobbyists, I started off small and, you know, now we're looking forward to bigger and better
great things. Great, great. And I do have a follow-up question there, but before I forget, thank you so much for your service to our country.
Oh, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
A lot of military in my family, and you know, I've been surrounded by guys and gals that have served. So like I said, I appreciate it.
Sure.
Hey, Corey, so what did you learn about yourself in the process of launching a wine label?
Well, I can tell you that first and foremost, humility. I learned very quickly that, you know, I did an oenology winemaking program through Washington State University. It was kind of a hybrid distance coupled with residencies at Washington State. And, you know, I came to the wine region thinking that I knew a little bit about wine, and I learned very quickly that that's all I knew was a very little about the winemaking process.
Right.
But what I've also learned is that, you know, the people in this region, the professionals, the people who have made it what it is today, have huge hearts and are willing to help people who show an interest and give a level of effort. So the first thing I learned was be humble, ask questions, and don't be afraid to ask for help.
So be humble, ask questions, ask for help.
Yeah.
And for any aspiring winemakers, because probably a lot of administrators are going to go into that industry retiring, but what would be one tip you give us? You know, this question is totally just for me and sure. Miriam, but
sure. Well, I'll kind of give you kind of a compound answer, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
First and foremost, the easiest way to make $1 million in the wine industry is to start with 10 million. Because regardless of whether you want to go small or medium or large, like any other business, capital is key. But most importantly, the bottom line is you have to remember that the wines that you love may not necessarily be the wines that your customers or future customers love. So expanding your wine knowledge is key. You know, always looking for developing palates, learning about grapes. And lastly, just recognizing that you have a wine production, which is where the winery is made, and then you have a vineyard where the grapes are grown. And in many instances, those are two separate businesses. You can choose to operate in both spectrums, or you can buy your grapes from a grower and make wine that way to kind of reduce costs.
Very interesting. You know, and what you just said too is actually very profound in the leadership space, but the idea that the wine you love might not be the wine that your customers love, that's very much a leadership principle, because oftentimes we go what's natural and comfortable for us, but that might not be meeting our people where they're at and adapting and being flexible to actually serve, right, the folks that are under our care. That might be a good transition point to talk about, you know, what you do with your company, Vithos. But can you tell us a story of starting that?
Right. So I retired in 2012. And after 20 years in the Air Force, as you might imagine, you get accustomed to performing in a certain way. I was fortunate enough to be a part of a pretty significant organization within the Air Force, the Air Force Office of Special Investigations. There's about 330,000 or so people in the Air Force. This organization has about 2,100 badge carriers, similar to what I did. So a difficult organization to become a part of, but more importantly, very high caliber leaders, very successful, and people who understand servant leadership, people who exemplify many of the things that you read in textbooks and, you know, books in general. So, but as far as the transition to my own company, you know, I realized that working in the corporate world, I tried that for 4 years, and quite honestly, it wasn't my thing. I was used to running my own organization, setting the tone and pace and the direction, and I wasn't fulfilled. And working in an environment, working for people who didn't understand the value of people, who didn't understand the importance of culture and how to connect those two. And so Vithos, you know, came about, and I've never looked back since.
that's a good, I really appreciate, like, just, you know, how you've taken, I guess, the bull by its horns. Like you said, you haven't looked back since. That's amazing.
Sure.
I have to ask this question too, since you're in the Air Force. Did you used to play CRUD?
You know, that's one of the things that CRUD is a very popular game, but I never got into it. it's one thing that I can't speak to.
I'm connected to some guys from View from the Top. You know, Dwayne, you know, connected us, and there's guys like Matt Miller. He's been on the show twice. He actually sponsors this show. He was in the Air Force, and a number of others that served in the Air Force. And so, yeah, they showed us that game, and wow, that's a crazy way of using some pool balls and a pool table. I guess if the sticks are no longer usable, you come up with that game.
Well, that's a lot of times where it gets crazy in overseas environments, where each Air Force installation has, it's called a co-located club, or it's like a club for specifically for, you know, Air Force members and their families. And as you might imagine, you inject a little liquid courage in, and those games can get quite comical.
So. Right. Yeah, that's the thing. And our entrepreneurial meetups are completely dry, but it's still a lot of very competitive and quite crazy. But we'll bring this back to you. Corey, how would you describe your leadership style and how did you develop it?
So I was fortunate to work for some great, very great leaders at a young age. I was leading teams at 20 years old, and I had people who taught me very simply the value of others, the value of a team, and the fact that you cannot be successful in the long term in a directive form of leadership. So throughout my career, I was able to lead teams in garrison or on military installations. I was able to lead people in, you know, other types of environments in Iraq and in Korea and places like that. And what held true is the caliber of people that didn't necessarily change, because I was fortunate to work with very high caliber people. But what held true is the basic tenets of servant leadership, right? The fact that we're here to serve, regardless of what level we are in an organization, to care about members of our team as much, if not more, than we care about ourselves, and to actually exemplify that. When you give somebody your heart, whether, you know, it's in a combat environment or it's in a stateside environment, mm-hmm. you build a bond. You know, you build, you know, and it sounds kind of corny and mushy, but I truly believe in everything I just told you. To this day, it's what I strive to do.
Can you dig into that a little bit more in terms of how do you actually show that you value others? How you said sure. that phrase, like give them your heart. Like, what sure. does that look like? How can I as a leader do that?
Well, quite simply, regardless of our personality profiles, sometimes we have an innate need to always be heard, right? Sometimes it's because we're overly assertive. Sometimes it's because of the timing of the task. And how we show people we care is by actively listening, right?
Yeah.
By seeking others' input, by allowing them to feel like they have a stake in the outcome, right? By giving them a say-so in the planning process. Now, some people might say, well, what about those time-sensitive periods, right? What about the times when directive form of leadership has to be employed? Well, when you have a culture and you have a team that understands you as a leader, when those times happen, then they will fall into step and they will ask questions later. They will engage because they'll understand the time critical nature of what's happening. So.
You talked a little bit about personality profiles. Is that something you do in your consulting?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we right now more than ever, there's as I know you're very much aware, there's a leadership gap in our country. And that's not a political statement. That's just a fact. We have 10,000 baby boomers a day that are retiring. Those positions are being backfilled by Gen Xers and soon to be millennials. There is a disconnect right now between the Gen Xers and the millennials as far as leadership, followership, and so on. And simply, the directive form of leadership does not work in many environments. And so what we're able to do at our firm is to take behavioral analytics, and we're able to assess in like 5 minutes, 7 minutes max, what a person brings to the table from a DNA perspective by way of their behavior. And then we're able to create development plans based upon that individual, as opposed to what some companies or leaders tend to do and do a one-size-fits-all approach.
those behavior analytics, I mean, is that a certain profile that you use, like DISC or Myers-Briggs, or sure. Is this something you developed?
No. I use what's called the Predictive Index, or PI. PI is one of the only tools that can actually be used for a hiring decision. I'm very familiar with DISC, and it's a great tool, though. But DISC is typically used for organizational development, meaning you have a team and you want to try to get that team to function more effectively. DISC is one tool that can help in that regard. PI is a tool that's designed to help make sure that companies are hiring the right behavioral fits for their organization. But more importantly, in about 2.5 pages of a report, I can tell you how to lead Daniel versus how to lead Corey. Very simple.
Interesting.
Yep.
Yeah, you said you get that data back like 5-7 minutes. Is that, wow.
Yeah, so I send you a link, and there's two types of questions. They're adjectives, basically. The adjectives that you select are based upon how you feel others perceive you, and then the second set of adjectives and how you perceive yourself. And at the end, I get behavioral understanding of how you are in four key areas: dominance, extroversion, patience, and formality. In those four areas, I can say, well, Daniel would be good at this position in this company, or he may not be good in this position. And so when you look at it from a corporate perspective, right now, companies are spending it's costing companies about 16% of an employee's salary. So let's say you had a $50,000 a year employee. Every time that position turns over, it's costing the company $8,000. So if you have companies that have high turnover rates, they don't understand why. That's how we come in and we help them isolate the root cause.
Hmm. Is that something that, I guess people hire you to do that, right?
Exactly. We do that. I teach the consultative sales process. I teach how to lead people based upon their behavior. So we go in and we'll work with those mid-level managers that I mentioned, and we kind of change their thought process on, perception management versus actual leadership.
Can you dig in there? I've never heard it explained that way, perception management versus actual leadership.
Yeah. So oftentimes, we'll deal with clients where we have, say, that mid-level manager who may have a team of 10 people. Well, unless they've been through a course or unless they've are a proponent of leadership, they may not know how to effectively lead people. So what I call perception management is they might think that they know what drives Daniel, right, or what drives Corey, but they've really never been trained in it. So they go into this perception, let me perceive, let me do this, let me do that. And the reality is they're dancing all around what their employee needs. We actually give them an assessment, give them the results of the assessment that says, listen, this person is an introvert. They appreciate being recognized in private as opposed to being called up on the stage and be given an award in public, right? To this person, if you tell this person in advance what you want from them, as opposed to dropping something on their desk at the last minute, they're going to be much more effective because this is how they are. So perception versus actual leadership.
That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
Corey, what would you consider your worst leadership mistake and what did you learn from it?
So my worst leadership mistake early on was, applying that broad brushstroke that I mentioned. We all go through ebbs and flows, successes and failures in a leadership capacity, because in my case, I happen to work for great leaders, but I was put in a situation of leadership at a very young age. So there was a task that, I was given to complete. And one of the things as leaders we have to remember is when we delegate to a direct report, that delegation, we don't delegate accountability, right? We delegate responsibility for a task. So when I didn't communicate effectively and I delegated both responsibility and accountability, I learned very quickly that when the task wasn't done correctly, that I had to answer the mail for that. So the lesson learned is we can always delegate responsibility for a task, but we don't delegate accountability.
That's good. Today's podcast is brought to you by CSC Consulting Group, whose mission is to support people in education and nonprofit organizations to improve processes and enhance the performance of their organizations. Learn more at www.cscconsultinggroup.com. Corey, we're really interested in rituals and how people get their day started. So what does the first hour of your day look like? And do you have any type of morning routine or ritual?
Sure. This is actually something I've had to work at because my behavioral profile is as such that I'm always on the go, right? I've always got, you know, I go to bed thinking about things. I wake up thinking about things. So I, like many professionals, have a natural tendency to reach over and grab the phone and see what transpired in the few hours that I was able to actually sleep, right? I don't sleep well. That's another story. But actually preparing for my day is something that I still work on and have to focus on. Taking time out to just get centered, for lack of a better term. Some people call it balance. Some people call it meditation and reading. So I spend some time just focusing, whether it's with a cup of coffee or, you know, just recognizing and being thankful for what I have, being thankful for the fact that, you know, I'm here for another day. So it's easy to get caught up in the world and everything that we do and lose sight of the fact that we've been given another opportunity. So, and then from there, I basically just kind of begin to set the tone for my day as far as, you know, now we're kind of getting into the winemaking part of things. So I'm going to have to shift my balances between my consulting business and the wine business. So I frame my day. But the most crucial part of that is just taking time to get centered, focused. Sometimes I'll do some readings. Sometimes I will, you know, I won't call it meditation. I'll call it just giving thanks, basically.
Yeah, having gratitude.
Yeah.
Well, Corey, you've been leading since 20 years old. And yeah, based on these experiences you've had, what would you tell a new principal about leading a school?
Wow. I have some friends that are teachers, and I have some, you know, I've talked to administrators. I think first and foremost, listening to your teachers, right? Much like active listening for a small team. I think when you're able to harness the power that, you know, your faculty can give you, if you're able to actually solicit their input, let them know that you might be the administrator, but they, the faculty and the staff actually run the school. And I think there's a big delineation there. I mean, everybody knows who the principal is, right? Everybody knows who the vice principal is.
Yeah.
But the fact are there's teachers that have been in that school in many instances a heck of a lot longer than some of the administrative staff, if not all the administrative staff. So it's valuing the people you have, involving them in the decision-making process, soliciting their input, listening, and then empowering them to do things that maybe aren't within the confines of a traditional teaching role, but that are willing to take students from, you know, a known to an unknown type of a learning environment. Sometimes that gets reversed, right? Sometimes we want to go unknown to known, but our evolution in the education is going to be centered on application-based teaching and comprehension-based instruction. People sometimes are upset about Common Core and some of those other types of philosophies, but that's the next iteration in how we develop our students. So long-winded answer, but something I'm passionate about.
I love it. That's good. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
If you could add a class to our schools that's not currently taught that you know of, what would that class be?
You know, it's kind of outside my area of expertise, but I think one of the things that is important to me is, I guess I don't know what the title of it would be. I think more or less a class that is centered around community service, a class that is centered around volunteering. You know, some of the schools that I'm familiar with, they will do certain aspects of this, right? But I think sometimes what gets lost is the value of giving back to communities and the value of teaching students, whether they're elementary school students or high school students, what it's like to go and help someone who's less fortunate. I got a lot of friends of mine who do that with their children, and the children tend to have a much more, that's what I'm looking for, a much wider appreciation for all people. So one centered on, I guess, philanthropy or volunteerism.
Yeah, it's like they have a wider perspective, or like a more holistic perspective in a sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Corey, when you think of the word leader, who's the first person that pops in your mind?
That's my father. My father, I should say my dad, actually. You know, I'm adopted, and my dad raised me since I was four. And I often joke, you know, about some of the things we went through as a family, but I understand what it's like to, you know, stand in line for food. I understand what it's like to not always have the things that other kids have. Now, I'll be the first to tell you, I wasn't poor by any stretch of the imagination, but what I learned from my father is a never quit attitude. Always try to help people, leading with your heart and not your mind. And so I'm fortunate that he's still with us. He turns 80 this year, and he's still somebody that I look to and somebody that I seek guidance from almost on a daily basis. So
that's good. You know, it seems like a theme almost through this show. I've heard you mention a number of times in terms of leading with the heart, right?
Yeah.
And you gave some examples of how to do that and really listening and knowing your people. What would you say to folks that are scared to do that, right? It makes a lot more sense. It's more logical for them just to be mind and fact oriented, and they're sure. Afraid to be vulnerable, I guess, and lead with the heart. What would you say to them?
Well, that's a great question, and something that, you know, that I see very often. You know, fear, I think one of the things we have to realize is that oftentimes we fear what we don't know, right? We fear the unknown. And fear associated with emotion can cause discomfort or uncomfort. And simply by making ourselves vulnerable, that means we're opening our heart to someone and saying, listen, you know, I value you as a human being. I value what you bring to the table. So the fear that we have is, by doing that, is someone going to take advantage of us as in either a position, you know, if I'm a senior executive and I open my heart to someone, are they going to take advantage of me, right? And so that's a natural feeling. But the fact of the matter is people have an innate desire for belonging, and that comes from connection. And we connect with people. Yes, we can have a very cerebral conversation about many topics.
Yeah.
But when we get down into the, you know, the nuts and bolts of what life is all about, it's about feelings, it's about emotion, and having the ability to lower our guard, right? To those people that you're talking about, maybe you start with something small. Start with people you know. You know, being vulnerable with someone can just say, hey, listen, can you help me? You know how many people can't say that phrase because they see it as a form of weakness, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you start saying, hey, when you invite people into your inner circle, hey, can you help me? Can you lend a hand? That shows vulnerability. We don't have to have all the answers. And the sooner we realize that leadership is about others, the more that it becomes acceptable to be vulnerable.
That's awesome. What do you think is the worst leadership advice you've been given or you've heard being given, Corey?
Right now, one that drives me absolutely bonkers is the outright attack on millennials. It's something that I hear constantly. I was in a leadership event in Buffalo not too long ago, and you might have gleaned from our discussion that I'm not a very shy person, and
right,
I'm not afraid of confrontation either. And I talked and I heard a person admonishing all millennials, right? What a stereotype. And I told the person, I said, you know, you don't know me and I don't know you, but I'm about to give you a little education. And she just looked at me. She's like, I said, whether you want it or not, stand by because it's coming. And I said, you know, if I were to take a board right here, a whiteboard, you know, I was able to list what millennials want. I said, step by step, things like inclusion, understanding their why, mentorship, guidance, understanding how their role fits into the big picture. I said, that falls under one umbrella and only one umbrella. And I said, that's leadership. And I said, the sooner we realize that as executives and start giving millennials what they want, the faster they're going to integrate themselves into our businesses, right? The faster they're going to stop cycling through jobs every 12 to 18 months because they're not getting what they want. So her response to that was, well, yeah, but they're so self-entitled and they're so lazy. I said, wow. I said, that's a great assertion on your behalf because I get the option to work with people, employees of all ages, and I can show you plenty of Gen Xers and baby boomers who fit that description quite nice.
Yeah, exactly.
So my point is, listen, stop pigeonholing millennials. They're some of the best and brightest that our country has right now, and we can pick and poke at every generation if we want. But that's my pet peeve at the moment.
Yeah, mine too. I hear that too much. It's like just completely discounting a whole generation of folks that can add value to their communities. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Exactly.
Corey, how do you want to be remembered as a leader?
Someone who cared, someone who listened, someone who placed significant emphasis on those people that I had the privilege and the opportunity to lead. In my military career, I still am in touch with a lot of people that I served with, a lot of people that I was fortunate enough to lead and to teach the craft of investigations. You know, I don't need a pat on the back. I'm not that type of a leader, but I measure, you know, my effectiveness in the relationships that I have with the people that I've been able to serve.
What would you consider one book every principal should read right now and why?
Wow. One book. I'm a huge book guy. I usually have two or three books going at any, you know, at any one time. I'm trying to think of one. There's one book that I would encourage. You know, I've often asked if there's one book on leadership, what would it be? And I think your principals could read a book called American Generalship. And it's by Edgar Poyer. I think it's P-U-Y-E-A-R. It's military-centric, as you might imagine. But if you needed one book to learn everything there is to know about this huge topic we call leadership, I would encourage your listeners and principals to read this book.
Well, I'd definitely say that's the first time it's been mentioned on the show. So, and the listeners know, right? We're going to have that linked up in the show notes so you can pick up your copy of American Generalship today.
Yeah, yeah.
Corey, what do you do for fun?
So for fun, you know, I'm a big outdoor guy by way of winter sports. Just had to put the snowmobile away, unfortunately. It's 70 degrees here in the Finger Lakes right now, so the snow days are gone. I was just in Aspen not too long ago at a veteran event, so I got to do some downhill skiing. So I'm a motorcycle guy, so it'll be time to get the motorcycle out, do some cruising around with that. So those are typically what I do, and I'm fortunate enough to live on the lake. So get out and do some boating as well. So anything with a motor, typically an engine and a steering wheel.
Get you going.
Handlebars, you know, I'm all about it. So
very cool. Corey, if you could be automatically good at something, what would it be?
Wow. You know, I think if I could be automatically good at something, it would be, I could just say like an athlete, right? Because as a kid and growing up, I always had to work extra hard just to be like one of the average athletes,
sure.
You know? Some people have that natural talent. I wasn't necessarily one of those. So big fan of basketball, big fan of running. But I would just say just having more of a natural athletic ability.
And what message would you put on all school marquees if you could do that for just one day?
So listen twice as much as you talk.
Well, Corey, you've made it. I'm proud of you. This is the last question, but it's a tough one.
Okay.
You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget or resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. So how would you build this dream school, and what would be your top three priorities?
You're a good interviewer, buddy. You're
Thank right you. Here. Hey, this is why I make the big bucks, right?
That's right. That's right. So I think a dream school, even though I wasn't necessarily good at science and technology and math, I love the subjects, but again, I pretty much had to work hard in all of them. I would build a school that was centered in science and technology and math, and that actually had enough teachers on staff to work with students who maybe weren't naturally gifted in those areas, and to help them, you know, achieve greater levels of success. I would also have a school that focused on the fine arts, things like music and band. I was fortunate to be in band programs, and those taught me a lot about life. They taught me a lot about, you know, math, believe it or not, which I struggled in. And I would have more counselors for students, both from a behavioral health and wellness standpoint, but more life counselors. I know we have, many schools have guidance counselors, and they have a purpose that's very valuable. But I think listening to what students have to say, helping them form their academic minds, but also their emotional and behavioral minds, I think sometimes gets lost in the focus on aptitude and traditional education. So yeah, in a nutshell, I don't know if I answered your question, but those things I think are pretty important.
Absolutely. It's really interesting too, you know, and at this point, this is show 101, and just hearing how 100 different guests would, you know, answer that, I think is just a really interesting, maybe even research study. I should probably like go back through, listen to them all, look for common themes, and put that out in like a little ebook or something for the listeners.
Sure.
Well, Corey, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any actionable steps you'd like listeners to take after listening today? And what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Sure. So I think the actionable steps that I would offer just for consideration is if you have a chance to be vulnerable, take that first step, right? If you have a chance to listen instead of talk, take that step as well. When we actively listen, when we open ourselves up to what others have to say, and we actually listen to understand instead of listening to respond, we can grow so much as human beings and so much as leaders. And I think sometimes those key things get lost in our everyday life. You know, the best way to reach me is I'm on LinkedIn. My website is myvithos.com. If you're interested in learning more about predictive analytics, I'd love to chat with anybody who wants to grow the culture, whether it's in a school environment or whether it's in a business. I love talking about organizational development and human resource leadership. And so I just appreciate the opportunity to be talking with you, Daniel, and thanks so much for your time.
Absolutely. And Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Corey. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Corey in the search bar, and the show notes page will pop up. You'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Corey, thanks again for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thank you.
Better Leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show, and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across, links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well? If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.